This is a replay of the Wednesday night, May 28th WGN show. We started right at 10. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call. I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings unless sports preempt us. That's from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593. My toll-free number from One VoIP. For the world's best customer service, it's One VoIP. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. We have 3 hours to spend together tonight, and I was just wondering, what on earth am I going to talk about? And as I was rolling around in my mind, I realized, oh, wait a minute. He's going to save me. We have Steve Probst on tonight. So, Steve, without further ado, welcome to WGN Radio. How are you?
Well, thank you. I didn't know I'd been assigned a saving role, but I'll give it a shot.
Yeah, I be honest with you, I forgot all about this, and literally I was sitting here thinking, what? And then all of a sudden it crossed my mind. I thought, oh, this is too good to be true. So I'm delighted about that. And so yes, as always, plenty of wonderful things to talk about. But I was just, would have been of all things Donnie Elbert's 89th birthday this week, and I was just going over some of my notes about him. And if he wasn't the most unlucky person, I mean, this guy wrote more than anybody, and half the stuff he wrote that became hits was stolen from him. And I thought, he's not alone. So I figured we'd start there. Of course, we know poor Kent Harris and shopping for clothes. But in terms of that, tell me some of the big ones in your mind, records that were woulda, coulda, shoulda, and then they came out by somebody else.
Well, Have I Sinned was a killer, but I'll tell you something. This is a sword that, two-edged sword, to coin a phrase.
Okay.
Because Donnie took the recitation part of My Confession of Love from Edna McGriff's Heavenly Angel.
Oh, no. Okay.
Oh, no. So he was up to speed as far as purloining lines. He had it done to him. But he was, capable of being a songwriter with a lot of influences. Let me put it that way.
Yeah, and that's well put. I would think, though, song for song, probably he was done wrong more than he did wrong, just because it happened so many times. But while I was reviewing some notes, I didn't realize that, his first group, the Vibraharps, that Danny Cannon, who was in it, became Lenny O'Henry with Across the Street.
Wow. Okay, that's a new one on me. But what songs were you thinking about Donnie Elbert that he had inspired other songs?
Well,
to be,
Shame, 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 and that
okay.
was interesting. He claims he wrote it, not only inspired, but he claims he actually wrote it. And then when it came out, of course, Sylvia Robinson was credited. But the big one, and I'm sure you've heard this story, and God, he was nothing if not good for lots of stories, would be Daryl Banks and Open the Door to Your Heart.
Wow. Now, connect the two. What song, what Donnie Elbert song are we talking about?
Well, here? Donnie Elbert wrote Open the Door to Your Heart.
Oh, I see what you mean. Okay.
And he actually, he lived long enough to see the royalties on that.
So was there a court action, or did he just have an amicable agreement?
I don't think it was too amicable. I don't think it actually went to trial, but there was a lot of noise and a lot of threats.
Now, songs that have, I'm sort of up to speed on other songs that have shown up in hit records, like Please Mr. Postman showed up in Mashed Potato Time.
Yes.
You know about that. How about Quarter to Three showing up in Run Around Sue?
Right. Now, was anything, and of course, you know, God knows Frank Guida would have taken action, but did he?
I don't know, but Gary U.S. Bond sure sang about it.
Yep, absolutely.
Copycat?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man.
He told me that there was a street gang in Norfolk that he was, God, I forget the name of the street gang. I've written down in my interview that he was going to go look up Dion and see what if he could settle at the...
Oh, that would have been interesting.
The extra legal way, let's say. But I don't think that ever happened. But here's Gary U.S. Bonds. Both Dion and Gary U.S. Bonds are still around, still going strong. That's great stuff right there.
And that's amazing, especially with Dion, considering his checkered past and his drug use. I mean, for him to make it this long, that's a testament to good genes, I guess.
Yeah, I would think. good luck.
Now, I was sitting here trying
which they
to
all can use.
Sitting here trying to think, and you probably do know this, but do you remember Sad Feeling by Cicero Blake?
No.
Okay, then you probably won't know this, but Leo Austell, who had a couple record labels, wound up using the exact same track on another record, and I was trying to think, what the hell was that other record? But you won't be able to answer that then.
What label was she on?
I'm trying to think of what they put Cicero Blake on, but let me let you hear a little of it.
Oh,
because
Cicero Blake?
Yeah, Sad Feeling, here, and it's the exact same intro.
That was on Success, wasn't it?
You know, I don't know. Let me. It was released several times, so let's find out.
One of the great labels out of Iowa.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. Exactly. But no, I know whatever it was, it ultimately was a Leo Austell label. Let me see what. But there's another, and I should have thought about this beforehand. But then again, I forgot everything. But I think it was on Renee originally. And Leo Austell produced it. But then on one of his other labels, I don't think it was, I don't know what it was, but there was the exact same backing track. And while we're talking, maybe it'll come to me. But I thought Sad Feeling was a great song, by the way. So indeed. All right.
Okay.
So with that in mind, maybe we've exhausted this. But
do you think we can get more obscure? I'm not sure.
Exactly.
That's possible.
Well, I loved Ron Dante's quote about the music business when he said, "There's an old saying: the music business is full of crooks and thieves and people who'd stab their mothers for a dollar." And then there's the downside. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I can relate.
And I think there's a certain amount of truth to that also.
I was never part of it. I just study it from a safe distance, so I won't be get too infected with the motivation or the results. I just stand there and cluck at it and... hope for the best.
Well, and I've written numerous books about it, and your what was the first rock and roll record continues to live on, because I can't tell you how often I'll have somebody call and say, "Well, I know the record that was the first rock and roll record." No, you don't.
Oh, okay.
Oh, no, you don't. And
compile a list of their candidates. Maybe that can be volume two.
Right, exactly. But what's interesting about it, of course, is everybody wants to be able to put it in a nice box, wrap a bow around it, and say, this is when it started. Like last night, I was talking to a caller, Isaac, and he asked me if the Carter family actually started modern country music. And apparently it had something to do with somebody mentioned something on the ACM Awards. But, you know, I hated to break it to him, but there's no one line of demarcation when anything started. And your book is so wonderful about that, because you've got about 50 good choices in there.
Yeah, well, we tried, and certainly, that was an arbitrary limitation. I think that there's always room for more candidates, but I'm pretty happy with the results. I mean, it was, everything from country and western to your favorite, Les Paul and Mary Ford.
Yeah.
That's the one you would have That's the one you would have nixed and put in.
I probably would have, but there again, all of it. That's the interesting thing about those songs, because all of them had a hand in shaping what would become, quote-unquote, rock and roll. So that's why they're all worthy candidates. But to single anyone out, you know, I always go with G by the Crows only because it got so much pop airplay. But all of them were worthy.
Yeah, well, you also like it because there's a Huggy Boy story attached to it.
Well, and
with Huggy Boy, you can't go wrong.
That's absolutely true. That's so true. You know, talk about a guy who never got his just desserts in any real way. And it's a real real shame. But anytime I think of Huggy Boy, and I think we've discussed this, I will always laugh about his court appearance when he actually said to the judge, "I didn't know I was supposed to give the government a cut about not paying his taxes." And
I'd never heard that.
Oh, yeah. One. No, this was when, if you remember, he got into big IRS trouble because of all those record hops, and he never, ever reported any of that money.
Right.
And so, sure enough, he comes to court and just completely straight-faced, because he meant it to the bottom of his heart when he said, "But, Your Honor, I didn't know I was supposed to give the government a cut."
And, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, and sadly, that tells us why everybody remembered Art LeBeau and knew that name, because he was nothing if not a businessman, and poor Huggy Boy, you know, couldn't keep two dimes in his pocket. But I always contended between the two of them, he was the real deal.
Yeah, well, Art, you know, I mean, we can discuss the proclivities and habits of each one. I mean,
oh, yeah.
if Huggy Boy hadn't spent so much time at the track, you know, if.
Well, right, right. Oh, everything about him was nuts. And that's in no way to cast aspersions about Art. Thank God for him, because his business sense caused him to come up with everything from coining oldies but goodies to the clubs to the record labels to everything else. That was truly great. But, I mean, I never got, and I liked Art, don't get me wrong. I still proudly wear my oldies but goodies jacket. But I got to say, if I had to guess between the two of them, which one of them really knew and loved the music, I wasn't going with Art. I mean,
now Art told me the story about how he came up with the oldies but goodies concept.
Really?
I don't know.
No,
yeah.
I don't know. Tell me.
Okay. Well, here he is with his both. Actually, he said Huggy Boy was involved in this. They were at one of their apartments, and they were playing records and trying to seduce whatever girlfriend was
yeah.
at hand, and getting up to change the record each time the song was over got to be daunting and interfered with their goal. So Art literally decided, okay, if I put sweet sounds on one side, you know, in the Still of the Night or things, he wasn't thinking about particular records, though. If I put love songs on one side and rock and roll songs on the other side, that might take care of my own personal problem. I can play 20 minutes of an LP and have plenty of time to mess around. So he actually took the idea to some major labels, Columbia, RCA, you know the
oh, sure.
the lineup, and they each turned him down and said, "You got to be joking," and you know, "We're not going to have any part of this," even though he helped promote Elvis, and Elvis was on RCA, et cetera, et cetera. So Art contacted Dootsie Williams, and Dootsie said, "Art, you helped me break Earth Angel. You made my career for me, so you can use Earth Angel, but just don't put every Penguins record on your LP. Just limit it to Earth Angel." Well, that broke the ice. Then other indie labels decided to join the party, and he was able, you know, Flash Records and Aladdin or whatever labels he contacted, particularly L.A. Indies, and he got his LP together. So it was Dootsie Williams that broke the ice for him and gave him the entree into figuring out what kind of music to put on his LPs.
That's interesting. When you said he went to Columbia, I could just hear Mitch Miller laughing him out of the room. But you know what's interesting is that literally, I'd say, just a couple of breaths away from that was Moish Levy with the series on Roulette. So
sure, golden goodies.
All of that, and then 22 original winners, and everything else, and then Mercury did a bunch as well. But I think the Moish Levy stuff was probably literally within a month or two of Art.
Yeah, well, sure, but Art was the pioneer in that field.
Absolutely, you betcha.
The thing that sort of frustrated me was every time he reissued the album, he changed the track. So volume one,
right.
The original volume one, had nothing to do with the much later version.
Right. And then you get to the CDs. Don't even start me. All right, so we're talking to Steve Probst, which is always a delight, kind of making my night. And, of course, all that I don't know, he does know. So when you call and ask me questions and I don't know, he's the guy to ask. So 888-876-5593 on WGN Radio. WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Well, there he is. That's Cicero Blake, 1964, on Renee. By the way, we're talking with Steve Probst, and we will continue to do that right after the news. And maybe he can shed some light on it, because before the news, this comes out in 1964 on Renee, and that's one of Leo Austell's labels. And then, and as far as writer's credit on that, it's actually said it's written by Barrett Strong. I don't know, but here's the deal. Moments later, 2 years, comes this. Credited to Kenneth Griffin on the writing, but if that's not the same backing track, I mean, I think they just pulled the vocals off one and put it on another. But I'm sure there's other examples of that, and we'll continue to find fine stories as we talk to Steve Probst, and we'll get right back to it on WGN Radio. WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Of course, those are the Penguins, and that is the A-side. Yes, Earth Angel was, of course, the B-side, and Steve Probst, who we're talking with, knows all about that. That's for darn sure. Wasn't it Huggy Boy who caused that to flip?
Yeah, I think actually he did, just like Tony Allen told me that they misprinted Night Owl. The early 78s had the wrong title on the wrong side, and that's how Night Owl got played, because I was supposed to be the featured side. So
really?
You never can tell what's going to happen with a B-side. It might become historic and classic. I was also thinking about the Oldies But Goodies album. Let's say Mitch Miller had consented to use a track. Do you think Oldies But Goodies would be the same if Art was forced to put Yellow Rose of Texas on that?
Oh, I know. Absolutely.
How would he follow that?
Yeah. Well, I'm sure that, you know, should that have come to pass, they would have come up with a doo-wop version of it somehow.
Yeah, it really lends itself to that that sound. You were talking about reusing tracks.
Yes.
Now, the pioneer in that endeavor, as far as I can determine, was a name you know well, George Mottola.
Okay.
He never created a track. He didn't love to use over and over again. A lot of them were put behind his erstwhile spouse, Ricky Page, who I think is still around and still singing in the Nashville area, but doing country and western. But he tried to promote her as the girl group sound, and it never quite worked, but he sure put out a ton of records by her, oftentimes using tracks that were behind Jesse Belvin or some of the other singers that he successfully promoted.
Absolutely. Well, you know, Mottola was interesting. Now, I always thought that Jesse Belvin wrote Goodnight, My Love, but apparently it's George Mottola who has the copyright. Well, his heirs, I guess, but I did not realize that. But
what happened was Jesse came to Huggy Boy and said, I need $400 or $800 or whatever. And Huggy didn't have it, but Mottola walked in, or John Mariscalco, one of the two,
right,
maybe both of them, and they had the money and got the copyright.
Oh, geez. And that was so Jesse Belvin. He absolutely had no idea. He was holding on to gold, and he would, you know, sell songs for next to nothing. Really, really sad as far as that goes. But
but he always knew there was a great song coming up because he had that ability, and, you know, who knows what would have happened, you know, over the...
Oh, he'd have been huge. He'd have been just huge. I no doubt
Absolutely.
In my mind that was the case. And still so sad. And what I can understand, there were a lot of stories, and for people who hadn't heard, he and his wife Joanne were killed in a car crash after leaving a very interesting concert in Little Rock that was the first integrated concert, and a lot of riots and all that broke out. And some people were claiming that, well, it was racially being chased by people. But the reality, from what I know, is that it was Ray Charles's driver who Ray had fired him because he would do things like fall asleep, and that's who was driving when Jesse and Joanne were in the car, and that is why they didn't make it.
Well, do you want to hear another story that
yeah.
I'm not going to attribute it, but it was a person who was involved with Jesse.
Yeah.
He said that Jackie Wilson performed... I don't think it was a split audience where whites were on one side and blacks were on the other.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was a white audience that saw the first show,
right,
and a black audience, or maybe it was the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
The black audience saw the first show, and the white audience saw the second show. But for whatever reason, the headliner was Jackie Wilson. Jackie Wilson deferred. He performed for the black audience, but there was some sort of problem when he was performing for the white audience, and he refused to do a complete show because of that problem, which enraged, you know, turned this into a racial problem, and that's why the white, you know, certain, you know, people in that particular audience took it out on Jesse and might have slashed his tires or messed with
right, and that was true. That was that 1968 Little Rock deal. That's absolutely true. And like you say, he played the first one, pulled out of the second one, and so that's one of the reasons that people thought that the death of Jesse Belvin and Joanne was related racially. But for everything I understand about that particular car crash, it wasn't. So
That person that told me the story has always had a grudge against Jackie Wilson because he said he somehow, by being stubborn in that regard, indirectly led to tragic results. And I don't know if how fair or unfair that is. I've heard a few Jackie Wilson stories that'll...
Oh, yeah.
I don't think I better be talking about on the air, but there's some wild stuff
in
the business.
There absolutely were as far as that goes. But what a talent, you know. And when you're that talented, you get away with a lot. But what I did not realize about that Little Rock concert, because, you know, it was billed as the first integrated, but with the two shows, it wasn't integrated.
Yeah, that's right. So there's a white show and a black show.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay. Well, and I don't know which came first.
The black show came first.
Okay, so Wilson did his
right.
complete show for the
he
black
did.
Audience.
And then he
and
pulled
the white
out.
Audience felt shortchanged, and there was
right.
a problem.
And, oh, man, they brandished guns and all that kind of stuff, chased him, out of the parking lot and all that kind of stuff. And I'm sure that's why people thought, oh, well, that's how Jesse Belvin wound up in that car accident, but it wasn't. So,
wow.
Very, 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 very sad as far as that goes. And like I say, that driver was fired by Ray Charles. And supposedly what had happened was the car they were riding was a 59 Cadillac, blew a tire, and the driver, you know, reacted badly and obviously created the accident that killed them both.
You know, Billy Foster, who was married to Etta James at the time, you know, Billy Foster
sure.
of the Medallions, told me about a hair racing story where he was driving and there was a really bad accident, and I think there were a couple of deaths, and then Etta James, this was in the South, when
yes.
she was on Argo or Cadet Records, narrowly escaped death in a very similar circumstance. So what does that say about the roads and
back then for sure. I think that they had left Memphis and they were heading south, probably through Mississippi when that happened.
Or to Muscle Shoals to record in Alabama.
Well, that'd have been great. Yeah, a little early for many people knowing about that, but yeah. And that's an interesting thing too. Rick Hall's studio down there. How many records were cut there? Of course, later in the Atlantic days, when Jerry Wexler went down there, a lot of people don't know this either. They actually the musicians left Rick Hall's studio and started another studio where most of that Atlantic stuff was cut. So it wasn't even the same studio.
Wow. No, I didn't know about that.
Yeah.
It's you know, so much great activity in a short span of time in some of these places that it's just mind-boggling. Then it all goes away and we wonder what happened to it, you know? I mean,
well, that's what's so sad, and that's why, you know, bless you for writing the books that you have, because, of course, some of that stuff, when we go, that's going to be the only record of any of it. So with that in mind, are you planning to write something else?
Yeah, I'm working on something, but it's the book that I'm trying to update my L.A. book, but...
Oh, yeah.
Man, how many pages, and I still have interviews, and I run into other people's interviews that are, you know, and also I'm doing a book on the history of rock and roll records throughout the 50s and 60s, and there were some really evil people in L.A. at the time that were, you know about Tony Alamo, don't you?
Uh-huh. Yeah, absolutely. I don't know what you want to... And we're talking about the guy who was the alleged evangelist, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And had children working at his... making his bejeweled vest.
Right.
Levi vest. Some of the activity he was involved in at the time, how he got people to record for him, and he had a couple of labels... And just was an operator for a couple of years in Hollywood, but I won't get into the really bizarre behavior. But
it was a twisted cult, to say the least. And Tony
yeah.
and Susan together, they were certainly the perfect couple. And I think that there was a book out about the children of Tony Alamo. So I've not read it. But Whispering in the Daylight was the title.
Well, he loved her so much he kept her on ice.
Yeah. So
he just liked having her around. So I run into characters like this. I think he's maybe the most extreme, but there were a lot. There was a guy named Richie Marsh, who became Sky Saxon.
Right.
And some of the stories he told me about, was it Bob Ross that recorded him? Bob Ross was willing to record Sky Saxon for free when he was Richie Marsh trying to be Elvis Presley, and in repayment of a free studio time, Richie had to dig a swimming pool for Bob Ross.
That's great. Of course, as Sky Saxon, he became the Seeds and pushing too
right.
hard, but that was interesting, too, that wound up on Gene Norman's label. So I'm sure
right.
there's a story there, too.
That was thanks to Jimmy Madden. You know Jimmy Madden, don't you?
Sure.
Yeah, who was a sort of a jazz vocalist who, when Tequila hit, he formed his own Champs and started touring because Danny Flores wasn't touring with the band at the time and did all sorts of California dates as the Champs. And later they recorded together, so, I guess all was... amicable in the end, but Jimmy had worked with Richie when Richie was struggling, and Sky, became Sky and wanted the Vikings look. That's how he costumed the Saxons with Vikings helmets and fur jackets before Sonny Bono was doing that.
Right.
And hit big with Pushing Too Hard, the whole Sunset Strip anthem, the Sunset Strip days. So
oh, absolutely. And that one, to me, that was one of the worst records ever.
Rock and roll in
right.
action.
Okay. Right, yeah, just one of the worst. And it was, to me, the most surprising 1966 hit, but it was huge. We're talking with Steve Probst, and I can't wait to read that book, by the way. I want to be the first person to buy a copy because you know where all the bodies are buried. And, the good news is, since none of them are alive anymore, as far as the label owners, you can tell all.
Well, yeah, that's pretty much the case.
Yeah.
I can even talk about Johnny Otis or whoever.
I liked
but
him.
some people were really good people too. People like Dewey Terry of Don and Dewey.
Yep.
I've got no complaints about him. He was just a pure soul. And Don Julian, no problem. Even right. Tony Allen, who came up with some bizarre stuff. I think he was.
I liked
sweetheart.
Him. Yeah, I even liked him when he was in the Lions redoing some of his stuff. So I thought he was just great.
And I've got a trove of letters between him and Art Roop when he was writing Art Roop from San Quentin. Tony went to the Slammer because he had like a trunk full of marijuana between his commuting back and forth between Texas or Louisiana. And that'll do it every time. So, Tony learned the hard way. Don't be too much of a player.
Well, man, Art Roop, you could write an entire book about him. And and I'd really want to read that. We're talking with Steve Probst. And if you want to get in here, 888-876-5593. It's been the highlight of my day, that's for sure. And I can't wait to hear about every one of those label heads. But right now, I know if you listen to this show, you love radio, or else you wouldn't put up with me. So you probably know about the Sea Crane Company, ccradio.com. And you know that every radio that Bob Crane developed has one thing in common, just the best reception, AM and FM. So when I tell you he's got a Wi-Fi radio with great reception, I know that's like hitting Control, Alt, and Delete. What? Well, the deal is, if you have a wireless router or wireless access point, depending on how hardy it is, some things connect easily, some things maybe not so much, or maybe if you want to put it in that back bedroom, not a prayer. Well, the beauty of the CC Wi-Fi 3 is it's going to connect to your wireless router no matter what. It's just great that way. So reception is there. But not only that, the audio is better than any smartphone in the world, and you can listen to just about anything you want with over 30,000 radio stations and even more in streams and all that. You won't run out of things to listen to. But what I really love about it is easy. And I say that because I put the first one down in front of John before a show, and I said, well, you figure it out. And he did, easily. And so the bottom line is it's intuitive. You don't have a big learning curve and all that kind of stuff. You don't sign up for an app. There's no microphone. There's no ads on the screen, no monthly fee. And it's got a full-size remote control, not to mention that superior reception. It sounds good. It is good. So go to ccradio.com, ccradio.com, and take a look at the CC Wi-Fi 3. I think you're going to be impressed. Now, if you can't go online, undoubtedly you don't want a Wi-Fi radio, but you might have someone in your life who you want to buy a wonderful present for. Well, call them. They've got the world's best customer service. They'll talk to you over the phone. You can order over the phone. Or if you want them to mail you a hard copy of the catalog, just ask. 800-522-8863. 800-522-TUNE. But if you can go online, oh man, the world is your oyster. CCRadio.com. Look at that CC Wi-Fi 3. You tell them Raleigh sent you from WGN Radio.
In your lifetime, there will always be a special someone who can make things happen that shouldn't happen, can make a dream a reality, make pain so much pleasure. Let me tell you about that someone in my life. Heavy load so much lighter. Who makes my darkest night so much brighter? No one but you, girl. When I'm in trouble, who comes when I call? Lay a head on my shoulder, say don't you worry at all. No one but you.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, speaking of Tony Allen. And we're talking to Steve Probst. And as I say, I'm just thinking more and more of that that book. But with Tony Allen, of course, Night Owl is one of those heartbreaks, because to me, that record should have been a number one R&B record. And I think timing was the problem, because didn't they come out in 55, maybe around the time right before the Billboard was changing the charts?
No, what happened was that Night Owl was on specialty 560.
Uh-huh.
561 was a song called Tutti Frutti.
Oh, God.
And a label like Specialty can only work one hit at a time, so Night Owl got lost in the dust. But it became a standard. It became a lowrider standard. So it sold well throughout the decades, but it didn't, you know, hit the national charts because Little Richard was busy changing the face of rock and roll at the time.
Oh, man, that's interesting, because, yeah, it was 1955, absolutely. And
yep.
And the other thing, of course, is he had to spell it Night Owl, N-I-T-E. So if you've got it in your collection and you're looking for it and you're filing alphabetically, understand that it won't be N-I-G-H-T. I have
right.
lost that record for weeks at a time, not realizing. But,
well,
but, yeah, and it was credited to Tony Allen and the Champs. So back to your Champs story.
That's right. He had the original Champs. They were the Champs when they backed Tony, and they were the Chimes when they were on their own. So,
interesting.
Yeah, that, because they also did a couple of records for Specialty as a group without Tony, including a song called Tears on My Pillow, having nothing to do with the Little Anthony
right.
song.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, I saw that once. I thought, wow, I wonder if it's a remake. Yeah, exactly. So that's
yeah, totally different. But I lost the train. Oh yeah, talk about misfiling records. Some people would have fun with the Midnighters.
Oh. Well, you have to have two E's. And it's funny you say that, because I had a request that I'll play later, nothing like The Midnighters, but another The Prophets from Milwaukee.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Just put an extra E on it when there's another group of the same name. I can't believe the hour has gone by this fast, and I can tell you next time what we're going to talk about. I want to know more about these label owners. That's going to be terrific.
Oh, yeah, Eddie Davis.
You can't tell those stories.
You're right.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can't even tell those stories. Yeah, I know. Breaks my heart. Yeah, poor cannibal. Anyway, yeah, but the stories you can tell are just classic, and I can't wait to hear them. So thanks for taking time out.
Well, it's my pleasure. It's always fun to talk to you and revive what's left of our memories. You know, I struck out on Cicero Baker. Blake, but I'm going to do some research. Next time we talk, maybe I'll have something for you on him.
Yeah, and Sounds of Dawn, the exact same record, different writer credits and all that. Yeah. All right. Well, I'm looking forward to it. Can't wait. And thank you, Steve.
Well, you're welcome. Good night.
All right, good night. Steve Probst, just the best. And, you know, I always give links to Amazon, but the books are just phenomenal. And, of course, what was the first rock and roll settler? Rock and roll record is an argument settler, or maybe it's an argument creator. I don't know, but it's a lot of fun to read, and I think you'll want to. So there you go. We'll pick it up next hour with whatever's on your mind and your requests, too, coming up on WGN Radio. WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. I played it by Tony Allen earlier, and that's the first time he appeared on it, and that was 1960 on Everest, and that was The Lions, and he was lead singer of that. So, yeah, that was a great record. And he was a guy who also did not get enough of his due. Yeah, you say Tony Allen, and people say, who? Now, of course, if you're in Southern California, certainly you know Night Owl, because that was just absolutely, absolutely huge. But I'm really looking forward to Steve Probst's book. Yeah, all the truth about the label owners. And man, there were some people there who would really, hair-raising to say the least. And some of the stories, I don't think he could tell, but I'd say there's a lot of them that he can, and I can't wait to hear them. So 888-876-5593 is 8888 Raleigh. And there was something I had planned to tell you. That's right. Cannot hold a thought hostage. I'll tell you what. Yeah, there was something. Well, for one thing, you heard about Billy Joel, right? Has canceled his tour dates, and that was sad, and somewhat surprising to say the least, because 76 years old. Of course, everybody knows who Billy Joel is, so I don't have to go there. But big tour. He was in the midst of this and had to cancel it. And have all the tickets refunded because he's got an issue with hydrocephalus, normal pressure hydrocephalus to be exact, NPH, if you're wondering. And that is interesting because it absolutely can disrupt cognitive functions. Now, fortunately, it's not a death sentence by any means. It's not necessarily in any way fatal. But at the same time, it's certainly something that can put a glut in your strut, so to speak. And his medical team said, I might not want to do these concerts right about now. And so it's rare. I'll tell you what, like 0.2% of people over the age of 70. So worlds of luck to him on getting to the bottom of that and being back on tour. So Don is in Beloit. Welcome back to WGN Radio.
Hey, Raleigh, how you doing?
Hi.
How you doing?
All right, how about yourself?
I liked your... Good. I'd like to hear in your interview with Steve. I always forget how to spell his name.
Probst.
So that's why when I...
P-R-O-P-E-S. Yeah. It's as easy as that. P-R-O-P-E-S.
Yeah. On the radio, there's so many names that are sort of similar, so you don't really know. I didn't know that. Sorry.
All right, well, now you do.
Yeah. No, I'm definitely buying his book.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait for him to write that. And like I say, I can think of a few stories that he won't be telling. But there are going to be so many that he will because, label owners he was right. They were certainly a group of, maybe not the nicest people. But again, this was, what you were talking about right after World War II. These were guys who came back from the service, didn't, for a variety of reasons, find work, and became entrepreneurs. You didn't need any money to start a record company, and you didn't even need any money to press a record. What do you, obviously, if it's going to be a lot of hits, you're paying, but you're also making money doing it. But in terms of the sessions, if $50 went into them, that was a lot. So these were singles. It was not a big business by any means. So consequently, you had dozens and dozens of these colorful characters, to say the least.
And just in the niche, the niche of country music, right? Not many records, right? You know very well.
Country was different. Didn't have that kind of label deal like pop, because of course by the time 45s were out and all that, by 1950, country was established. The Grand Ole Opry had its pecking order, and you had your stars and you had your group of labels. So there weren't that many many people who would come in and just overnight start up a label in country.
Right. Okay. That makes sense. Yeah.
But for
yeah.
pop, oh my dear God. And obviously for R&B as well, but sure, it was, and some of these people were truly their own worst enemies, but were great. I always talk about George Goldner. He was blessed with the ears of a 13-year-old girl. He could hear a hit. He could smell a hit. There was nobody better than George Goldner. He was absolutely amazing, but he was such a hardcore gambler that the mob kept coming after him, and Moish Levy kept buying his record labels by getting him out of trouble, keeping him alive.
Right.
But George was the real deal. He knew that music.
We talked about Link Wray.
Yes, and I played it last night for you. I hope you heard it.
Thank you. I did. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Again, another story where if you listen to the record, normal record producer people, they didn't like him, but this people that listened to him in concert. I mean, that story of how he got his hit out is fascinating because it involved a kid of one of the executives of some place.
Yeah. Absolutely. And he was not a kid himself as far as this goes, because he was born in the 20s.
Right.
He was
right.
Absolutely not a kid, but a North Carolina boy. Yeah, absolutely. And we talked about that and the lung problems and all that, that kind of stuff. But, there were several people who wound up with that distorted fuzz-tone guitar, if you will, and invariably for reasons that were not intended, but he certainly was one of them. Now, how he got on Cadence, I don't know. That was Archie Blyer's label, and I don't know what the connection was with that. He had been on Epic and on Swan, but the hit was Cadence, and I don't know where that came from.
Okay. Well, he poked, like many people later, he poked holes in his amplifier. I mean, crazy people are like, what are you doing? And he's drilling a hole in the speaker cone to be more distortion.
Right. Right. Well, the original distortion, came from falling off trucks and things like that, from broken speakers. So sure. There's Marty Robbins' story, very well known, and all that kind of stuff. So sure.
You have a really great writer. You write on your website just like you talk. You have a really good style of writing. I really liked your Rick Derringer write-up. Oh, that was really good.
Yeah. 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 That's why I played If You Tell a Lie last night, because he's just so young in that and so full of life. And, talk about luck. Why Feldman and Goldstein were there. I don't know if Goddard was or not, but I don't know, because they did not normally go on the road as the Strange Loves. They had other people do that. But, they had been quite a songwriting team. And like I say, they did things like My Boyfriend's Back and all that. And so when that died down due to the British invasion and all that, they came up with that pimp of the Strange Loves, and it's still one of the best stories. But they were not going to take it further than the studio. So they hired guys to go on the road. But they wound up in Dayton, and they heard Ricky and the Raiders, and the rest was history for Rick Zeringer.
He's so unique. He's such a great unique tone and talents. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, you had a really interesting mix of car songs for the Indy 500.
Oh yeah.
Thing,
okay.
You know.
All right.
You did that. Do you like? I don't know if you like this, but could you play? I don't know, I was going to ask you a couple of songs to play, but like okay. maybe Sam Cooke, Bring It On Home, or whatever version of that song you want to do. Mm-hmm. But do you like Brian Setzer and what he's going back? You know, he's just so reverent for the old days. And
right.
Like this one song, Switchblade 327, I think you would really like that song.
All right, I'll write it down because I don't know it. Okay.
Brian Setzer's orchestra and so on. It's called Switchblade 327. It reminded me when you were looking at, I was looking at your list of car okay. songs.
All right, I'll look for that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you. For Ali, for taking my call
and
everything that you do. Yeah.
All right. Well, good to talk to you. Thanks.
Thanks so much. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Yeah. So, no, I don't know about Switchblade 327, but I like the title. That's for sure. And, of course, you know, Stray Cats and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah. And he was actually in that Eddie Cochran movie, kind of a cameo appearance. All right. So, 888-876-5593. We'll get to Tubby in Chicago, and I will get to more of your requests. We'll play one that James had requested last night, and a story there, too, coming up on WGN Radio.
Always. Just a day, not for just a year, but always.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. And that, of course, is Patsy Cline, and that was James's request, and it's an interesting song. There was a remake of that. Well, and you're saying, wait a minute, she died in 1963. How's there a remake? Well, they took the track and in 1980 re-released it. It was just horrible, absolutely horrible. But that's the original, and that was recorded about a month before she died, February 5th, 1963, and that was at Columbia Bee at 804 16th Avenue South in Nashville, and it was, as usual, just a who's who of country music playing on that. And it was an album set. Actually, and there were three cuts that they had done that they were going to release on albums. They ultimately did, but if you're wondering about the backup singers, that's the Jordanaires. Owen Bradley obviously produced it, but everybody was in there. Grady Martin and Floyd Kramer and Bill Purcell and Bob Moore and Harold Bradley and Buddy Harmon and on and on. So this was an all-star session. Like I say, they did three cuts they were planning to put on albums, Blue Moon of Kentucky, Sweet Dreams of You, and Always. And, you know, of course, then a month later, she dies. And ultimately, it was released again and again. In 1968, Decca put the same 45 out that they had in 63. But originally, it was for A Portrait of Patsy Cline, released in 64. So that is Always, the good version of Always. You don't want to hear the 1980 version. Oh, my dear Lord, they could have left well enough alone. And that request was for James on the South Side. Okay, So, Tubby in Chicago, welcome back to WGN Radio. How are you, Tubby?
I'm good, Raleigh. Hanging in there. How are you? I got to turn down the radio.
Okay.
This is the radio. Okay. I know you said that man's last name.
Steve Propes.
That you were interviewing.
Yeah, Steve Propes, P-R-O-P-E-S.
Okay, yeah. I can't look it up unless I got that last name. Thank you. Okay. I want to say that prayers are always going out for everybody. I want everybody to know.
Oh, of course.
That they're just always going out, and you can't forget that they're going out. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
So stuff happens, and I mean, I forget. I forget that somebody's praying. I like that song. Somebody prayed for me. My mama prayed for me. And it just reminds you that, people are always always looking out and trying to be helpful to people. Okay, now, that song, you're the kind of person, you know everything about this stuff. And I said, all I got to do is say this line and still know what song I want.
Uh-oh. Let's hear it.
Okay, you're going to have to listen to me try to sing. Okay. Tonight is my forever.
Okay, absolutely. The Shirelles.
Okay.
All right.
I hope you. And then the Jersey Boys, what was that famous song they sang? I think it was in the Jersey Boys thing.
Well, there were a number. They did a number of things in that movie. What a horrible movie that was, too. And actually, yes, I have seen it. And they certainly didn't do any favors to. I can't think of his name right now. But in any event, there was one that became big because of the Jersey Boys. "Cry for Me," and I thought that was actually a good song. The Four Seasons had done it earlier on an album cut, and it was just terrible. But I thought the Jersey Boys version of "Cry for Me" was a great song.
Okay, name another one. I want to hear.
Oh, well, let me do it. I can do it this way. Let me look up a Jersey Boys soundtrack, and then we'll have it all. All right. So Jersey Boys. Okay.
Were you trying to think of Bobby Vinton? Because, you know, I can't never think of it.
Big Girls Don't Cry, December 1963. Sherry, Walk Like a Man. My boyfriend, Dawn. I'm coming up with Four Seasons songs for you. Big Man in Town, Come on, Mary Ann. Let's see, a Ragdoll. Those are My Eyes Adored You. So, that was pretty much what it was as far as their hits, as far as that goes.
And then the one I always come up with some song that I can't. I haven't pinpointed that Frank Sinatra tune yet either. And I haven't found the case, but now on the list after the music, if anybody's out there, before I go to this dreary DMV business I wanted to comment on, if anybody's interested in some Gaither, I got some VHS videos, okay? My mama would just order them. And I really hate to see, I'm kind of purging some stuff because I'm 73 now. And I just hate for somebody to come in here and put them all in the dumpster, you know? We would be sitting there, and we just happened up on that one day. And we liked them. Actually, she bought tickets and sent me to that concert at the United Center.
Hang on a minute, Tubby. Got a break for the news. We'll be right back in moments right here, and I'll play your Tonight the Night for you. Hang on. All right, so that's where it'll be on WGN Radio.
Tonight.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and I realized after I started that Tonight the Night is a nice record by the Shirelles, but it's not the one that Tubby was thinking about. I think what Tubby wanted to hear was Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow? Radio. There you have it. And actually, it's not Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow on the title. I guess Scepter couldn't have fit it easily on the label, so it's Will You Love Me Tomorrow, and I'm pretty sure that's one Tubby wanted. Am I right?
You are correct, as usual.
Well, good. Yeah.
Exactly. That's exactly the one I wanted. Okay. Now, and when I said it, before I forget, I want to make sure that I wanted to wish y'all to have a nice, lovely summer. And some of my philosophical things I try to share with people. This guy got up to preach one day, this church I listened to, and he, this is not, I don't like church or politics, but I just love it. Because he picked one of the Psalms, and what they do is they get up, and they tell you what the scripture is, right? And then after they share that scripture, whatever they're preaching on, they say, you may be seated. And this guy, so I was telling all my friends, you'll like this, Raleigh, hang in there. And he said, fret not. I said, hell no. So I was telling my friend, all this confusion and stuff, don't let yourself get caught up. You know, that's why I came up with that thing about a nation state. Don't let nobody have no board meeting up in your head. Okay?
Yes, I love that. That's a good way to put it.
Enjoy the present, okay? And see, because you never know when adversity is going to come knocking on your door, okay?
Right.
Remember I was talking about everybody got a different, they dealt a different hand. They got to deal with every hand they dealt. Well, I'm just trying to share with people. Oh, notion like an old friend from the church, Olga. I used to jump in the back of the car every time they run down to Indiana because they would be baking goods and stuff. And I was like high school. And I said, Mama, can I go?
Yeah.
can I ride that? And she said, yeah. And so Olga was, the lady that took care of, we all at the same church, and she put her little wheelchair in the back truck, and we hit the road, and I had the whole back seat and stuff, and she had given me a plaque one day, because I told you I had a real troubled adolescence, and it said, enjoy scenery along the detours, okay? Find something that you like. Ain't nobody else got to like it, but if you like it, if you like going to the ice cream parlor every night, that's what you do, okay? It ain't nobody else's business that makes you feel okay, okay?
Yeah.
Okay, now, what else I got? A couple more things I'm going to be through. The DMV. I don't even want to chime in too much on. I got a problem, though, and I'm going to talk about it the next time because I don't, it may be beside my friend at her job. I work, she was like, they sent her thing, they cut off her phone. I ain't gonna name the company right now. And I was like, and then they start sending her text that they got a $10,000 construction job to do and that she gotta come up with $3,000. Now she done paid her bill. I'll get into that one next time because we wanna have a nice, happy visit today. The other thing is the DMV, but I did wanna say this because I went to get a free phone on the street. Some people require that you have a Social Security card. Sometimes they want a link card, whatever, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But when I go to Social Security and I go to DMV, DMV wants a Social Security card, okay? Hey, listen to this shit. This is crazy. Sorry. This is a big mess. When you go to Social Security, they want to see your state ID or your driver's license.
Yes.
Can't get warm.
That's hilarious.
And I said, you know, and I had everything, the papers, and there are some of those things they sent out. I'm not going to say it. I'm going to say it off. I'm going to get online with their senior so you can understand. I said, I've thought about that. And I said, these people are nuts out here. And when you read it about Social Security, I just don't want to say it over the air. And whenever you read it, you'll know exactly what I'm going to say it over the air. Okay? But I just want people to just kind of relax and chill and have a good time. I hadn't checked in because my schedule is sporadic. But I just want everybody to just chill, have a nice summer, relax, you know what I'm saying? Enjoy the Raleigh James Show. You know, everybody call in with your good stuff so we can enjoy each other's company, okay?
Sounds good to me. Thank you, Tubby.
Okay, God bless.
All right, bye-bye. You too. So, 888-876-5593, 8888 Raleigh. And Patty is a first-time caller. She's in Geneva, Ohio. Welcome to WGN Radio, Patty.
Hey, Daddy-O the Radio.
Yeah.
I am so tickled to talk to you. It was Papa John Creech's birthday.
Uh-huh.
And I just loved him so much. So, I thought you could celebrate that with me.
Absolutely. Today was the day, May 28th, 1917. And it's
anything else you got to say?
Well, I mean, it was very interesting because, of course, he was a virtual unknown to most young people as far as that goes. I mean, yes, he'd perform with Louis Armstrong and, you know, Big Joe Turner and a bunch of people like that.
Everybody.
But, yeah, right. But, you know, how many people know who Roy Milton was, you know, or as far as that goes? And so what happened, of course, is when the acid rock groups discovered him, quote unquote, and suddenly he became as big as it gets in San Francisco. So absolutely, yep. Guest it at the Grateful
Jefferson
Dead concerts.
And
Grateful Dead, yep. Charlie Daniels. He went to the Volunteer Jams and Hot Tuna and
And
so it's just one of those things how life is, because I'm sure the person most shocked about all this was Papa John Creech. He sure wasn't expecting it. So became quite well known and was with us until 1994.
Yep. You betcha. I'm so shocked I got through. I can't even believe it.
I'm delighted you did. I hope you're going to call me again.
Yep. I shall. Okay.
All right. Good deal. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
So, Papa John Creech actually ran into Joey Covington, Jefferson Airplane, at a hiring hall in Los Angeles in 1967, you know, for the union guys. And that's where, you know, he met them and they started a conversation in 1970. He was invited to join, you know, Jefferson Airplane and Hot Tuna and all that. And performed quite a bit and was a solo artist on Grunt as well, Jefferson Airplane's label. And so he had his backing band Zulu with Keb Moe, as far as that goes. So, but like I say, I guarantee you the most surprised was was Papa John Creech. Yeah, from Beaver Falls, Pennsylvania, and taught violin by his uncle. And so he moved to Chicago in 1935, started to play violin in bars and things like that. Actually did some symphonic work, which was unusual for an African-American. But he was good, and, you know, that trumps all. And so he did local cabaret stuff as well, doing a variety of things. So there was one gig he had where he was playing all German music, and it didn't matter. And so as far as that goes, as far as, you know, going forth from there, one of the hardest things for him was jazz violin. And he had to adjust his bowing technique and all that, but managed to do it. Moved to L.A. in 45, was at the Chi Chi Club, and did a lot of the ocean liner work. You know, a lot of people, musicians, did that for a while. In fact, the biggest disc jockey in Honolulu for years, Aku, he was actually a violinist on a ship. He kind of jumped ship at one point and just stayed in Honolulu. All right, so we're moving on to another first-time caller. Look at this. It's Eric, and Eric is in Apple Valley, Minnesota. So, Eric, welcome to WGN Radio.
Thanks very much, Raleigh. Hey, let me just tell you up front, it's a kicky blast listening to your show and learning a lot of stuff. About history, it's a little bit before my time on some of this stuff, but it's still fun listening. And learning about some of these musicians and where things got started and whatnot.
Yeah.
Anyways, hey, I had some, I've heard you mention, make some South Florida references and stuff before, and I was just kind of curious if you had ever met a couple of radio personalities down there that I remember from back in my youth. Mike Ranieri at 610.
Yeah, he was after me, but I knew who he was, obviously. But yeah, he came to WIOD in the 70s.
Were you at IOD?
No, I was at QAM. I was at WWOK. I was at half of the stations on the dial, but you were talking 60s.
Yeah. I remember QAM. They had a top 40 format?
Yeah, number one in town, 560 on the dial. And that 610 IOD, which for a while in the 60s was a rock station as WCKR, but they went back to IOD in 63. In any event, that was a beautiful dial position as well. So that 560 was good, that 610 was good. WGBS, that 710 was a decent signal. That 940 WINZ, that was a decent signal. That was it on AM. Everybody else was hoping.
Yeah. So, down there at the wonderful Isle of Dreams, they used to call it.
Yes, absolutely.
So,
I passed by the sign every day. So, yes, right there. Yeah.
It was a 79th Street Causeway,
yeah,
right?
Yes, it was. And, you know, this is the stupidest thing that iHeartRadio ever did. They forgot that they needed to renew the lease in order to be there in perpetuity, and they didn't on time, so they lost the tower site. See, it was WCKR. The television was WCKT, and so that was Channel 7, Sunbeam Corporation, and they both were right there. Beautiful location on the 79th Street Causeway, and iHeart forgot to renew it, and they said, see ya, bye.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, there was another one there, probably, I don't know about the timing, but Sandy Payton was one of the
That's all. You're talking shows. 70s. Yes, absolutely. I'm aware, but I was gone.
Oh, okay. Did you ever have a chance to meet her or see her?
No,
or anything
she was
like that?
She was after I was out of that market.
Yeah, she I just had seen her one time on a remote that they were doing, and she was like almost like a model type.
Mm-hmm.
She was a very attractive lady, and you know, but it's kind of one of those things. I'd listen to the show once in a while, but I just kind of knew of her and stuff like that.
Sure.
So, but they had a great promotion there, where they would give away groceries. Like they had this guy called David of the Highways would drive around, and if he spotted you with an IOD bumper sticker, they would pull you over. He would wave you over, and you have a chance to like pick an envelope, and the guy David of the Highways looked just like the guy from Seinfeld, Newman. He looked just like Newman, and so I ended up winning some groceries there one day. Like picking an envelope was like $100 worth of groceries.
So where were you? Where did they stop you? Where were you?
I was off on 995.
Okay.
I was up in Broward County.
All right.
I was up near Pompano Beach.
Oh wow! All right.
My Atlantic Boulevard exit.
Uh-huh. Very good.
That used to be my, I'm a surfer, so I used to surf down at the end of Atlantic Boulevard down there at the beach, 2nd Street. And
well,
I happened to be in the area, and they used to give clues where he was going to be.
Yeah.
And it was, and I heard it, and I was like, oh, he's got to be right in this immediate area somewhere. And all of a sudden, I saw him. He was driving like the big IOD car, all like, you know, wigged out and everything with their logos and their signage and everything. So,
oh yeah,
yeah. I kind of pulled up next to him and he pulled me over.
That's great. The bumper sticker promotions date way back. They were doing it even in the 50s at various stations, and QAM did it for a while. But when FUN had come on, lousy signal, but good little station. In any event, they hired a girl. This would have been 1970, and she was driving in their car. Before her, they had an Amfa car that went in the water as well. But anyway, this wasn't the Amfa car, but this was this was something equally bizarre. And so, on the air, her name was Pamela Britton. And I think her real name was Pamela Butterbrot. But she was gorgeous, drop-dead gorgeous college kid, and not necessarily the brightest girl. And so she is afternoon drive. She's doing a deal with the afternoon host at the time was Richard Ward Fatherly, Dick Fatherly. And, you know, she's, Dick, I'm following a 1969, whatever the hell it is. Let me get a little closer. I got it. And she ran into the damn car. on the air, ran directly into the car. And so, and so she, you hear the crash, you think it's a sound effect album, but I'll give her credit. She recovers quickly and she says, "Dick, I think we have a winner." And
that's one of the best all-time lines, probably.
Yeah.
Live radio.
Yeah, it really.
Yeah, no,
you know,
that was. It was great. What year was that?
That would have been it would have been 70 or 71, because I was still there and Dick Fatherly was there. And at the time, Pamela was dating the guy who was the Columbia Records rep. He was a cute guy, too, Bobby Hurt. Anyway, they got married. And I recently looked just because I was curious. They're still married. It's been like 50-something years. He's in his mid-80s. But yeah, so she did okay for herself. But yeah, that was probably 71.
Wow. And I never heard that story, but that's great. That's like fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, what about what about a guy named Jerry Wichner?
Okay, now you're talking MOR jocks now, yeah.
He was on WSWN, I think it was, 790.
Later.
He was doing overnights.
Later.
That's what I'm talking about, like probably like 70s.
Right, but Jerry had his big days were probably WINS. But, you know, if you want to stay in the same market, you're going to get in trouble after a while most of the time, where the call letters are not going to be as prestigious as they used to be. But when he was on INZ, that was a pretty big deal for him. But then he later went, when FUN became WNWS, he was there, and he was on WGMA in Hollywood. There's a real soap opera there, and more. So, yeah, he was around the night people, yeah.
Yeah, he had like a little. He had a song. I think it was the Jeannie C. Riley song, "Help Me Make It Through the Night."
Oh, Sammy Smith. Yes.
Sammy Smith. I'm sorry. Yeah, Sammy
yes.
Smith. "Help Me Make It Through the Night."
Yeah.
That was kind of his turn on song, you know, like intro for the show and everything. So I just remember he was a pilot, and he would give like fishing reports on a Saturday morning or something, and he would talk about it on the overnights. And but he had this really slow, deliberate, very calm kind of a manner and a way of speaking on the overnights.
Right.
And
He was a pronouncer. Oh. We always used to say that about them. They were the pronouncer with the pear-shaped tones and all that. But Jerry had been on INZ in the 50s, and for a while he was on QAM in the early 60s at the time that Bobby Lyons was there, and who else was there? Jack Purrington. Oh, my God, there's a name. Charlie Murdoch. So this would have been like 61 he was on QAM. And but before that, he was on INZ. So that's, and INZ was owned by Rex Rand, who was this guy, he was a helicopter pilot. In fact, that's how he died. But yeah, we used to call him Sexy Rexy. And
I think I've heard that mentioned by some of the people,
Who'd be there long enough, right? If you're there long enough, sure, Sexy Rexy. And he had a little daytimer in Tampa, too, WINQ at 1010. So yeah.
Mm.
Yeah,
hey, I got one more request for a song.
Okay.
I don't know if you could do it, but I kind of, have you ever heard, by the way, have you ever heard the Isley Brothers do the song Summer Breeze, which was a Seals and Crofts
hit
in the 70s?
I think it was an album cut for
them. Isley Brothers. The Isley Brothers did it, and their version is a little bit longer, but it's kind of soulful, and it's just really like something that, I love that, but I'll tell you what, I'll let you decide.
No, I'll play it.
Because,
if that's what you want to hear,
like that.
That's what you'll hear.
Yeah, I like that one, or I like Who's That Lady?
Oh, do you like the
By
the way, do you like the original Who's That Lady from 1964, the first time they did it?
I don't know if I've ever heard that.
Oh, well, then that's what you got to hear. I'll play them both, but you got to hear the one from 64, and then you'll have to tell me if you like it.
Does it have the same little guitar riff intro like the later version?
Well, it's a slow song. Let me find it for you here, and I'll play a little of it because I'm pretty sure it's on this computer because it's actually a song I like a lot. So let's see. Come on. I'm probably spelling it.
Well, I didn't even. Yeah, I wasn't even aware of that version.
Okay, here we go.
I just know it.
All right, here was in 64, and it's a very different song, but I liked it better. But I'll let you be the judge of that.
Mm-hmm.
right. So what do you think?
Yeah.
All right.
It kind of has like a little bossa nova flavor to it.
It's got a little of that. You're right. Beginning. You're right. So, absolutely. All right. Good deal. Yeah. I'm glad you called, and I hope you will again.
Yeah. Hey, Raleigh, I'll call you again because I want to ask you about some members of the band Chicago.
Okay.
And that kind of stuff. And so, like I said, it's always a kicky blast listening to you. I learn a ton. And unlike you, I'm pretty well-traveled with my kind of endeavors with I'm a coach. I do soccer coaching and done it from all levels all over the country. So
neat.
I first remember hearing about you, and I think I heard you when I was in the East Coast many years ago with in Philadelphia. Were you in Philadelphia?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I was on DB and PHT. You betcha, both of them.
Yeah, I actually was in like D.C. area, but I could pick up the Philly station.
Yeah, that 1210. Yes, the 1210. You betcha. That was me.
Yeah. Well, I love hearing you talk about the radio inside stuff, like distance, you know, like how signals travel and the whole radio bit, because like radio has been my best friend forever. So I just love hearing the inside and hearing you talk about it and that kind of thing. So, like I said, it's just tremendous.
Well, after the news,
I'll play
Summer Breeze for you after the news.
Okay, I'm listening.
Right.
I'm
Thanks.
There.
Thanks. Good deal. Thanks for
okay,
calling.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
It. Okay, bye.
Okay, bye.
All right, and obviously we blew the news, but Adam is doing the absolute right thing since I cannot tell time. But I know enough to say that it's almost the last hour of the show, and we got another hour to spend together, and we will on WGN. WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. There it is, 1974 on TNIC, Summer Breeze, the Isley Brothers, and that's for Eric and Apple Valley. So 888-876-5593 is 8888-Raleigh. Robert is in Stickney. What's up tonight, Robert?
Yeah, Raleigh. Boy, I love that first guest that you had. I'm already looking forward to the next time you're going to have him.
Oh, yeah.
It goes by like 10 minutes. Yeah.
It does, and yeah. I literally forgot he was going to be on, and when I saw that, I was like, John, call him now. So, yeah.
A song that's been going through my mind all day, you could correct me if I'm wrong on the artist. Was it Clarence Frogman Henry, a song called I Don't Know Why I Love You, But I Do?
Yeah, he certainly did a version of But I Do, absolutely.
Yeah, I like that, from back that era. Yeah, that was one of my favorites from that time.
Okay, I'll play it. I'll be happy to play it. All right.
Okay, great. Yeah, I'm just a little under the weather. You have to excuse me, I don't have a cough button. But.
Oh, no. Well, I don't use mine, so that's fine. But yes, But I Do, we will play that, I promise you.
Okay, thanks a lot,
Robbie. All right, thanks. Appreciate it. All right, yes. So yes, Clarence Frogman Henry. So 888-876-5593. Yeah, new life breathed into him when Rush would take him on tour because of Ain't Got No Home. All right, Jim in Richmond, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Hi, Riley. I was calling you requesting some songs, but I wanted to say a few other things. Number one, we're going to have, I swear, we're going to have a rematch of last year.
Okay.
My grandson's team, the Florida Panthers, won tonight,
so
they're going to the finals.
All right.
And, and Edmonton is 3-1 against the Dallas Stars. So last year we bet on it, and I'm voting for Rock.
Okay. All right.
And
well, I don't know. The last I saw, Edmonton was like third in the Pacific Division, so I wasn't sure they were going to make it.
No, if they win the next game, they're in the finals.
Okay, really? All right, well, good.
And that's a rematch of last year.
Okay.
And I don't remember the bet we had, but that's okay.
Yeah.
And I'm over the moon for him going, go Cats, go, in that video.
Sure, that's great.
And number two, today is my mother's 101 birthday.
Wow. All right.
And I was going to request a song for her, but I want to tell you about where that leads to. When I quit high school, I got a job in a grocery store. And then I bought, her birthday is on the 28th, and then Mother's Day and stuff. So a year after I started working, I bought her one of those 5-foot-long floor-mounted stereos.
Okay.
And she used to play Dean Martin songs.
Mm.
And I was wondering if you could play a Dean Martin love song for her today.
Okay.
Sure. And then number two, my infatuation with Big Bang Theory. She passed away in 2014, and before she passed, in the show, whenever Sheldon is sick, they sing a song, Soft Kitty, Warm Kitty, Little Ball of Fur. We sang that to my mom right before she passed.
Oh, man.
So that's why I'm a Big Bang Theory fan.
Okay. All right.
And then my second request is, for the veterans, can you play Arlington by Trace Atkins?
I don't know. I'll look.
I
have no idea if I have that, but I'll look.
Right. And then my third request is for me, can you play Dawn?
Four Seasons?
I guess so.
Okay.
Dawn.
Go away. I'm no good for you. Yeah. Okay.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Four Seasons.
Because,
okay.
Right. Because back in the 70s, my first girlfriend was Dawn, and I went down to Illinois State, and then I proposed to her and gave her a ring, and she said no.
Oh, geez, okay. Well, Dawn, of course, came out in November of 1963, but I'll be happy to play
it. Right, and then those are my three requests.
Okay.
And I'm in a good place tonight.
Good, I'm glad to hear it. Keep it up.
And thank you, everyone.
All right. Talk to you soon. Thanks. Appreciate it,
okay,
Jim.
Bye.
All right. So 888-876-5593, 8888-RALLY. James on the South Side. Welcome back to WGN Radio.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. Okay, I had one request. I was going to say, another Patsy Cline, San Antonio Way.
Okay. Did you hear Always?
Yeah, okay. I did. I loved it. I also liked that first hour with that guy. That was good.
Yeah, Steve Probst, he's great. He really is.
Oh, and I had another story that you can look up. It was about, actually, I'll give you two that you can look up. One is from Compton, California. A family went to have their uncle. Okay, they had gotten his best suit. He was for his home going. When they went to see how it was laid out, it wasn't their uncle.
Oh no, I know about this story. They're suing. I know all about this. They're suing the funeral home. Absolutely. And the funeral home at first said to these people, oh, of course it's your relative. Absolutely. And they forced them to open the coffin. And of course they brought in a picture and, oh yeah, this was Adams, Robert L. Adams mortuary. So, yes.
Yeah, because I had it on the thing and I never sent it.
No, that's fine.
A couple weeks ago, yeah. And I said, that I know how you don't like the particular one it comes from. I said, I'll let you find it on another side.
No, I know about this story. It has been going on a while. And of course, the mortuary is saying, we're not in the wrong. Everything's right. And we look forward to defending ourselves in court. I don't think so. They had the wrong guy.
Yeah. And, yeah, that was obvious. Oh, and about that doctor last night, it was from Texas, and the guy was 68. He basically was bilking Medicare and Medicaid out of almost $200 million.
Okay, absolutely.
Okay, to fuel his high-end lifestyle.
Right.
Ship boats and Ferraris.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think he was guilty of 160, but yes, he actually built them exactly 200 million, and there's not a shortage of these cases. There was another guy, Mohammed Makbel from Houston, that was 160 million fraud, and Jorge Quezada, who was a rheumatologist from Texas, he got 10 years in jail for $118 million. So, unfortunately, there is a long list of this.
Yeah. Oh, then I got you one that, well, I'm wondering, how does this happen? It happened in Florida.
Well,
guy married three different women in the state in three different counties.
Right.
Because the counties didn't cross-check.
Right.
And I'm like, between 2020 and 2022.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that, he had, and of course, he pleads, God knows, not guilty or something. But no, actually, he pled guilty to bigamy. And this was Henry Betsy. Yeah, and so he hasn't been sentenced yet. And this is Brooksville. That's Hernando County, in case anybody's wondering. But he was arrested after his wife discovered he was still married to two other women. And so he was in court. That's right. He was in court earlier this month and charged with bigamy. And so that was the deal. Now, exactly why he wanted to marry three different women at the same time is somewhat interesting, but there's not a lot of testimony on that. The three women all met him on a dating website and married him at the and all of them married him at the county courthouse. Met him on Match.com, said the most recent wife, and married him after just 3 weeks. Yeah, he said all the right things. Here's another one. Yeah, here's another one. Met him, this one, on Stir Online. Said he said all the right things. He was the perfect person. That was Tanya. The interesting thing is that this guy felt no need to get a divorce or an annulment before he married again. And so last year they arrested him. And you know, the woman who found out about the other wife then went county by county, putting in his name, and found the third.
Oh, boy. Yeah. You know, he's real lucky he didn't become another John Wayne Bobbitt.
Well, yeah, I didn't get much in the articles about as to his motivation as far as
I don't know. I mean, I don't know why men think that we can somehow satisfy more than one woman.
Well, there's got to be more to that story than that. You know it. So I'll try to find out a little more about him, because I am a little curious as to the motivation here.
Oh, and I got you one more.
Okay.
From Kansas.
Okay.
Okay, a county there passed that thing where you couldn't walk around nude in the nude public nudity after a middle-aged man insisted that he was God's gift to women, basically, to walk around.
All right. So I guess now they're having to put their own ordinances into effect after this. And all right. So we'll talk about that too. Good deal. Thank you.
Okay, you take care.
Good deal. Yeah. Now, intentional public nudity is a crime in some counties, and there's a state law on it too. But I guess Mr. God's gift to women didn't realize this. Douglas is a first time caller, and he's in D.C. All right, Douglas, welcome to WGN Radio.
Well, a good friend of mine in North Carolina, which I'm originally from, turned me on, as we say, to you.
Uh-huh.
And earlier you played, Always.
Yes.
Patsy Cline.
So you want to hear Sonny Turner since you're from North Carolina? You want to hear the beat?
I knew you. I just wanted to know that I wanted to make sure, because I knew you knew all about music. You know everything, practically.
Well, I'm a big beach music fan.
You know Sammy Turner's version of that.
Absolutely.
Now Patsy Cline has a more beautiful voice than his, but I heard his first.
Right, and the other thing is sometimes it's in the production, even if the voice isn't as good. Sometimes the production's even better. So,
as a matter of fact, I think Always goes back to the 40s, doesn't it?
Yes, oh, yeah, absolutely. Oh, no, or 30s. Yeah. Yeah, this is a pop standard, absolutely.
Yeah, at least.
Right, right.
Well, see, I had a million things to say, but
well, say them. I'm ready.
You're ready. I am a talker, and I talk all the time, but I like the fact that you know a lot of music, because in Carolina, you know, I grew up with a lot of, R&B stuff, and there was a lot of, as my friends called it, I didn't like this term, white boy rock, but I don't think they were deliberately being derogatory, but, you know, so I grew up in Carolina listening to country, rock and roll, and R&B and whatever was there, so... I'm an Elvis Presley, Jerry Lee Lewis, Little Richard, Chuck Berry kind of guy.
All right. Well, why not? Why not? And, of course, all the wonderful beach music.
Yes. Myrtle Beach. Yes.
Yeah. The Shrine.
Carolina.
Yes.
Yes. But I liked, just by music, New Orleans was very interesting to me in my growing up. I've never been. I've been threatening to go, but I haven't gone yet. One of these years, I think I'll make it to Martinsville.
Well, remember, places only exist in time. So if you're going to go to New Orleans now, you're not going to find Minute Records. You're not going to find Joe Banachek. You're not going to find any of the studios. You know, it's all gone.
Don't tell me.
Yeah, I have to tell you. But, you know, the showman, of course, that's General Johnson. It doesn't get more beach music than General Johnson. His first records were out of New Orleans on Minute.
I did not know.
Yeah, things like It Will Stand and 39-21-40 Shape, all that stuff.
Yeah, 39-21-40-46.
Yeah, well, 46, by the way, 46 was a label copy mistake. If you listen to the lyrics, it's 40 Shape. General Johnson did not sing 46, but the people at Minute Records got it wrong.
That's the group that, give me just a little more time.
Well, that was a different, the same guy, different group. The first group was the Showman, and then in 1970, he started chairman of the board with Holland Dozier Holland on Invictus. So, yes, give me just a little more time. And Everything's Tuesday was big in Myrtle Beach also.
Well, that's interesting. I used to get in debates with people about music because I think I know it all and I know nothing. He said, "That's a four top singing that song." I said, "No, it's not." And it sounded like them to me, you know, the Motown sound. Oh.
Well,
just a little more time.
Well, keep in mind, Invictus was Holland Dozier Holland's label, and they came from Motown, so there's an easy connection there. So, yeah, of course. But, Sammy Turner on Big Top, Always. I'll play it for you.
Yes. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thanks for calling.
Certainly.
Do it again.
Pleasure was mine.
Okay, bye. All right,
okay.
So how nice. We'll hopefully hear from Douglas again. All right, but yeah, on Big Top, 1959, Sammy Turner. You'll hear it on WGN Radio. Need a helping hand. WGN Radio. Yeah, it goes back to 1959 for Sammy Turner, but goes back to 1926. Irving Berlin, yes, issued the sheet music right about then. This one was produced by Jerry Lieber and Mike Stoller. You might know that or not, on Big Top. And happy to play it for Douglas. Would play more of it, but we've got the news coming up on WGN Radio. WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. The Prophets, that's T-H-E-E, Prophets, and that was Chad from Kentuckiana who requested that last night. Big Milwaukee record. Well, they were from Milwaukee, and 1968-69, depending on where you were. But interestingly, Carl Bonafide produced that. And the Screaming Wild Man, and if you're into Chicago music, certainly you're aware. He wrote a book a few years ago. I've got a couple copies of that I actually like. Been reading it. Been reading it over the last year and a half. I keep it in the bathroom. But yeah, the Screaming Wild Man. He did it all: singer, songwriter, musician, booking agent, band manager, producer. You name it. And one of the groups that he managed was The Prophets. So yes, but so much more than that. I probably know a little more about Carl than I do about The Prophets. But maybe we'll have him on some night, and he can tell us more about them because I don't know. So yeah, quite the career. But nonetheless, Carl remembered The Prophets and their loan claim to fame, and there you have it. So 888-876-5593 is 8888 Raleigh, and Isaac is on the south side. What's happening, Isaac?
Hi, that was fast. I'm calling. Yesterday night, you had a lady call in after I spoke to you, mm-hmm. and she talked about having breast cancer.
Yeah, although we found out that it's not been diagnosed.
Right, yes. I was going to call back, but I was like, well, I'll just wait till tomorrow. Okay, so you know that my grandmother passed away, and then I'm here with my great-grandmother. She's 94, uh-huh. and I know it was before the pandemic. I think it might have been around 2018, uh-huh. maybe 2017. They told her that she had cancer, and they breast cancer, and that they put her on an astrazole or something like that. They put her on like it, you know, because they also recommended that she get the mastectomy.
Oh, God.
That was called, yeah, and I was like, you know, hey, you're 94. What do you need your breast for? Like, cut off. But she was absolutely not. She didn't want to get that done. So,
and you know, I wouldn't really blame her because no matter what, you know, at 94, you want to avoid all the invasive treatment and surgery you can possibly have. You know,
yeah,
if if nothing else, the general anesthesia could have taken her out.
Mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
that's probably the most dangerous part of the whole episode.
And that was, like I said, that was before the pandemic. And she hasn't had any, you know... If I put her on the phone right now, she'll tell you she does not have cancer, that the Lord healed her of cancer,
okay.
that she does not have cancer. But, you know, at the same time, during the same time, she has a niece, her sister's children,
yeah.
who, her youngest niece, was also diagnosed with breast cancer.
Right.
Well, last week, she passed away.
Oh, so
she was 51
sorry.
Years old. Yeah. The cancer had metastasized to her bones, to her to her cervix and things. And so my thing is that I'm just agreeing with you in saying that it moves differently in everybody's body.
Oh, absolutely. You know? And age is a factor, too. You know, as I was saying, they're finding out more and more that doing mammograms after 75 years old is not necessarily a good idea, because even if some cancer is discovered, if it's very slow growing, you're going to outlive the cancer. you know, there are times that you do not treat. Now, obviously, her daughter was in her 40s when she was diagnosed. And that's a critical time. So sadly, a lot can be happening there. And you know, the Big C cancer is an interesting word. It covers so many different machinations. That
doesn't it? Yeah.
Oh yeah, exactly. And so one person's case may be completely unlike the next person's. And then there's the genealogical factors. You know, whether you're HER positive. You know, all those kind of things. So each case is different. But for someone over 90, I would urge them not to do anything that would require general anesthesia unless it was absolutely life and death that moment.
Well, she has, you know, DNRs and stuff in place, so she wouldn't want it anyway.
Right, exactly.
My thing is this. I have been trying to get her, I would like her to stay on the, she has an at-home doctor, and the at-home doctor will not re-prescribe the anastrozole unless I take her to a, you know, like a cancer doctor. And I have been fighting.
Well, no,
there's
a reason for that. And he basically is saying she's got to see an oncologist. All these drugs have tremendous side effects. And it's the law of unintended consequence. And what he's saying is, I'm not going to write this blindly. And I applaud him for that. You know, there's probably some imaging tests, not invasive, but, you know, whether they're ultrasounds or CTs or MRIs, there's a number of different imaging tests that can be done that he's probably thinking about. And I don't know enough about that particular substance to know what it is. But believe me, almost all of these drugs have a boatload of potential side effects. And you don't want to just keep giving them because, you know, sometimes the side effects are worse than what they're trying to treat.
Here's my question, though. To get her back to the oncologist, wouldn't they first tell her to go back to get another mammogram done?
Well, no. Firstly, what kind of insurance? Obviously, she's got Medicare, but does she have a Medigap policy or does she have Advantage? What does she have?
I know she has supplemental. I think it's Aetna or somebody like that.
Okay, but I mean, is it, when you say supplement, is it like Plan G, you know, like that type of a supplement, like a Medigap policy?
That's a great question, Riley. I couldn't tell you.
Well, if it is
confusing.
If it is a Medigap policy, she's got a lot more options than if she's on some type of Medicare Advantage. So the first thing you want to do is find out what it is. But because sometimes with Medicare Advantage, they won't let you see a specialist unless you get a recommendation from a GP, because it's run a lot like an HMO. But the Medigap policies are not. But the bottom line is the oncologist would be able to order whatever tests they wanted. Because there again, when you're talking about mammography, it's not just one particular test. You can have it done in a few different ways and, you know, depending on what they see or not. She's obviously got some records from some doctor somewhere.
Of course. So, and she's going to go back to that same doctor.
Well, and so if he thinks she should see an oncologist, recommend one. And then you go. You know, but I always say, especially with older people, err on the side of conservative.
Okay. Yeah. Because, you know, back then when she had the mammogram, she could stand and she could do a little walking. Now she can no longer.
Well, she doesn't have to stand. Yeah, she doesn't have to stand for it.
She doesn't?
No,
my concern.
No,
okay.
And there's all sorts of tests and things they can do with that. They may want to go right to an ultrasound and take a look there and go from there.
Okay. All right, Riley. Well, that was all that I was.
Well, let me know how she's doing.
Okay.
All right. Thanks. Appreciate it.
All right.
Okay.
No
bye.
Problem, bye.
Yeah. So you betcha. 888-876-5593. 888-88-Raleigh. All right. So we'll get to. Oh, Tubby. Tubby remembered the song. All right, Tubby. So what's the song?
Okay. It's a one-liner again. You're just too good to be.
Can't take my eyes off you, Frankie Valli. Can't take my eyes off you, Frankie Valli. Okay, I'll play it tomorrow night.
Love you. Bye.
Okay, bye. Yeah, so there you go. That's easy enough. All right, so now, oh, Sherry says someone in our community has passed. All right, Sherry, welcome back to WGN Radio. Who's no longer with us?
Hi, Rolly. I've been numb all day since 11 a.m. our time. But my aunt called me, you know, Cousin Jimmy.
Yes.
Who owns horses and races sulky, or what is it called? Not just sulky. Harness racing. But anyway, my aunt called me at 11 after my other second cousin. I don't know. What do you call your second cousin's wife?
Well, no, I mean, you could say once removed, but there's a real weird thing when you start getting how that works.
I always called her Aunt Sharon.
And that's fine. You call her whatever you want, of course.
But at any rate, apparently they tried to call him, and he didn't answer for a couple of days, and my other second cousin went to his home and found him.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
But I just wanted to share it because he's such a good storyteller. I think the whole side of my grandfather's family, his mom's name was Anne, one of my grandfather's sisters. At any rate, they are just such good storytellers. And he told you about the horse, his favorite horse, Dancing Egyptian.
Yeah.
One night, I remember, and said he learned how to turn on the spigot for the water and this, that, and the other.
Yeah.
But I have a lot of memories I'd like to share, but maybe not tonight.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Fun
stuff.
Was this totally unexpected?
Well, apparently Aunt Sharon said, I know he had gout.
Well, that won't
and
kill
I know
you.
I know and I know his ankles were bad, and he had like one ankle or foot that was prosthetic or something, or pinned together or something. And he was been in the hospital a couple times since, because I remember calling you and telling you Jimmy won't be calling in.
Right, right.
But at any rate, I did not know. And Sharon told my Aunt Carol, that who's my first aunt, my mom's sister, that who taught me how to swim.
Yeah.
Second grade teacher, lovely woman. But
well, I'm so sorry.
Apparently he had a disease, and David told me what it was, but a congenital
problems, yeah.
Congestive heart failure.
Yes, no, that's very possible.
He said that means that your heart weakens and it can't pump as much blood.
Well, yeah, heart failure, absolutely. But, I mean, it can be congenital, and this might have been something he was fighting for quite a while. So.
But he never told me about that.
Well,
he's always been open and honest.
Well, I don't know. I'm sure you'll get more in the coming days, because the family will be talking about this, no doubt.
Yeah, I hope so.
All right, well, our condolences. I'm so sorry to hear that. I remember Jimmy well, and yes, it's a loss.
Yeah, it is. And like I said, I've been numb all day.
Yes, of course. Especially
remembering the fun stuff. I went through my texts with him. And
Well, hopefully it was sudden for him. Because, you know, that's always a shock to those of us left behind. But if you got to go, you sure don't want to linger. So hopefully.
Yeah, I was hoping I was in his sleep or
something.
Yeah,
exactly.
Like that.
Or just he keeled over and got to go. Exactly. Yeah, that's my wish
for
everybody.
He was 76. His birthday was May 14th.
Okay. Whoa, so just turned. Yeah, a young man. All right. Well, I'm so sorry.
Thank you for
sorry.
Listening.
Oh, absolutely. And we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you so much.
Sure, Sherry. We'll talk to you soon. All right.
Bye-bye.
Very sad. And, 76. And especially if it's a shock to you. But like I say, hopefully to Jimmy, it was a blessing. It was quick. It was a relief. Yeah. But that doesn't make it easier for those of us left behind, does it? 888-876-5593. We'll be getting to Cindy in Chicago. And there's room for you, too, coming up on WGN Radio. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and that, of course, Marvin Gaye and Tammy Terrell, Ain't Nothing Like the Real Thing, 1968 on Tamla, and it was Cindy in Chicago who requested that. So, Cindy, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Yeah, I just, you know, thank you for taking my call, but anyhow, James is James from the South Side is everybody's favorite caller, but anyhow, I heard a story, it was on WGN News, about a doctor in Hoffman Estates, she was a woman, and she was mixed up in Medicare fraud, mm-hmm. and I guess she was in court today at the Dirksen Federal Building,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't catch exactly what she did, or they didn't really get that graphic, but she made women sterile.
Well,
I don't know what she did.
The doctor is Mona Ghosh. She's 50 years old. She's a licensed physician. She owned and operated Progressive Women's Health Care in Hoffman Estates. And the deal is she submitted fraudulent claims for services that were not provided or medically unnecessary procedures, and she overstated the length and complexity of the visits. She also falsified patient medical records and performed some procedures without consent. Now, that's the charges, all right? So she pled guilty to two counts of health care fraud, each with a potential sentence of up to 10 years in prison, and they're going to they're scheduling her sentencing for October. So the government is saying she's responsible for at least $2.4 million in fraudulent reimbursements. She admits to over $1.5 million. So whether or not she harmed patients by subjecting them to unnecessary procedures is, you know, not confirmed, but former patients, of course, would be able to pursue civil lawsuits if they felt that was the case.
Oh, wow.
So, but it's hard to say. You know, the whole thing with regard to Medicare and Medicaid fraud, which is even more common, is not a simple black and white issue. I remember so well. In fact, it was a guy when I was a teen who taught me Morse code, because he was already a ham and I was studying under him, and he was a doctor, a DO. And he ultimately went to jail for Medicaid fraud. But what was going on is he had a clinic in a very impoverished part of South Florida that was, all of his clients were African American. And the only way that he was really able to treat them to the degree that he felt they needed treatment was to kind of be creative, if you will. And he wound up going to jail for this. I'm not condoning it, but what I am saying is I know for a fact he didn't go into this because he was trying to make more money. He went into this thinking, I'll find a way to get treatment for my patients one way or another. Well, wasn't his best choice. But so it can be everything from that to people who, of course, are enriching themselves. Now, as far as performing unnecessary procedures, that's despicable. It does happen. When it happens, yeah. Often it happens for money. And so I'm sure that this is something where not only will Medicaid and TRICARE and private insurers take a look at this, but the patients will have every right to take her to court.
Yeah, there was a case, I think, I just thought of this. It was a Medicaid case, a fraud case in New Mexico, I think it was, where it was for dental work, and the dentist put, like, these silver teeth.
Oh, yeah. No, believe me, Cindy, this is not an unusual thing. I'd like to tell you that, oh, my God, how shocking. This happens more than you would realize, and it is good when they catch it. But we've ended the show tonight. We'll talk to you tomorrow night.
Okay, bye.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Yeah, so a very gray area, and that's for another show. We're here to have a good time, and that's what we're going to do 21 hours from now. So until then, that's a wrap. We thank Adam for keeping us on the air and John for screening your calls. But above all, I thank you for calling, and I thank Steve Probst for being here in the first hour. Looking forward to talking to him again and talking to you tomorrow right here on WGN Radio.